Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
This is live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. The Free Thought Radio Hour is an atheist call-in talk radio show about what else? Atheism. Atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after this, after the mid-show break. Still working with volume. Hold on. Hopefully that's a little bit better. All right, and we also have a television show. Did you know that? We have a call-in television show. Did you know that, Wombat?
I believe you're on the air now.
I knew about it. Hey, where's my intro? It's called Where's the Wombat? It's It's about a co-host that doesn't forget to get mentioned in the opening season of the show. He's heartbroken.
And I'm not used to this board, and it's taking all my concentration to get the volumes where I want them. Anyway. Did you know that we have a TV show? I've been on the air for over 8 years.
Of course. I love it. It has my favorite actor in it.
Actor?
I really feel like, Rowan Atkinson, he's really great. He does like the slapstick, charming comedy where he pretends he's like this man-child in a suit. It's like, he's named after food. I forgot what it was called.
Talking about the same show. The show I'm talking about is just a couple guys talking to the TV screen. It's a couple talking heads, and they're atheist heads, and they talk about all kinds of different things going on in the community, in the country, about religion and free thought and rationalist groups. And they interview people on the air and take calls from the audience. It's a community access TV, so it's on ctvknox.org if you want to watch it. Matter of fact, it's on right now. It's every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30. So go to Comcast, go to channel 12, I believe it is. Let me look real quick. I think that's right. Comcast channel 12, and also on Charter channel 192. If you have Charter, it's 192. And you can stream it, like I was talking about, on community TV, which is ctvknox.org. You can also find some of their archives of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Knoxville Free Thought Forum, and you'll be able to find them. Just adjusting my own volume a little loud. And if you're interested in getting involved in the TV show or the radio show, all you have to do is come to an ASK meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. And you could be our next co-host or guest. You may be scratching your head and saying, what is ASK? What is RET? ASK is the Atheist Society of Knoxville, ASK. Founded in 2002, we're in our 16th year now. ASK has over 850 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. If you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one.
Start one!
That's right. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetups, which happen every Tuesday. in the evening at happy hour time. Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. I'll get it here in a minute.
That's right.
It's in the old city where Spaghetti Warehouse used to be. And come down there and where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody's welcome as long as you can come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience at Austin. There is the other free-thinking group here in Knoxville, the RET, is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. I say they're an atheist organization. I'll just say they're mostly atheist organization. They do have members who are not atheists, and they want me to tell you that particular thing. Matter of fact, I used to be an RET member. As a matter of fact, I've still an RET member, been an RET member for 20 years, I guess. But I started a group called Atheist Society of Knoxville simply to use the atheist word since they didn't want to use it. And that's another whole story for another whole day. Then there's okay. another group in Knoxville called the Sunday Assembly, which sounds like church, and it is a kind of a no-God church. It started in England a few years ago, and now it's spread around the world. There's no reason to throw out all of the babies with the bathwater. Keep the good stuff from church and let go of all that superstitious nonsense. Go to the Sunday Assembly and feel the fellowship of a church-type gathering and without having to worry about hell or sin or any of that stuff that nobody's ever proved to exist. They only meet once a month, though. It's on the fourth Sunday of every month. So they just had theirs last Sunday. Well, no, it would be week before last, because last Sunday was September. Was it? Yeah. So anyway, on the fourth Sunday, head down to the World's Fair Park. They're in the International Building. Look for Sunday Assembly around church time, about 10:30, 11. Anyway, so that's about it for the announcements. What do you got on our plate today there, Wombat?
All right. How am I coming through? Can you hear me? Because this is a big announcement.
I hear you.
All right. I want to talk about appearances.
Hold on just a second. Say something.
Yeah, I'm going to say something. I want to make sure
that we're going through the right channel, so I had to take off my head. So it is. So we'll fix that in post. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What I'd like to talk about is appearances and whether or not they matter. Why I'm bringing this up is there's this really, really cool show you might have heard of. It. It's called The Atheist Experience, right? Sound familiar to you?
Yep.
All right. There used to be a series of episodes where the main host, or one of the main hosts at the time, his name was Matt DeLeonti, actually dressed up in a clown outfit and, like, dyed his hair on his face and beard pink.
Yeah.
Solely to demonstrate the point that regardless of how silly he might look, his points are still valid. And so his point was like, you know, the appearance of your person doesn't matter. And I definitely think there are some times where people can utilize a good appearance to inspire more trust in a person. Uh-huh. And people can also utilize whether they use that in a good way or a bad way. I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about people utilizing their appearances and actually hurting their position. Because I think in a certain context, appearances do matter. And I guess the best place to start is probably what you would see in Jehovah's Witness, the Mormon Church, or other kinds of churches like Muslim, even certain sects of Christianity, definitely in Catholicism, where you have like this forced dress code, in a sense, where the goal is to demonstrate that you're pious in nature and that you are virginal in your attire. And you don't try to dress in a way that can be seen by men to be in any way, shape, or form as sexual. And it tends to go towards more of the extreme than not. But, like, my mom, for example, is a Jehovah's Witness, and she can't wear anything other than a long skirt. She chooses to wear it herself, and that's fine, but it seems odd that they would have that kind of limitation on a woman in, you know, past 21st century. Uh-huh. If you go to Islam, they have lots of different kinds of, you know, hijabs. burkas, which were gowns that you wear on top of your head, and some look really beautiful, but some are a lot more conservative than others, and the goal of it is to keep men from looking at a woman with desire. It's a woman's prerogative to do that. If you go to other places, you'll find that, like, the manner of how people can not necessarily conduct themselves, but dress in order to set up an image of what they believe to be true, tends to start off with good intentions, but maybe, but ultimately comes down to, like, this sort of control that, as far as, like, a rationalist would see, tends to be rooted in something of, like, a, hey, I need to put you in this box, and you dare not leave this box. So even if someone, like, looks like they're having, like, maybe a really good time or dressed really well, the outfit they're wearing becomes a uniform for how conservative their thinking process is with regard to whether or not they're capable of freely expressing themselves. What do you think?
Well, yeah, excuse me, I'm still messing with these controls. But how you present yourself makes a whole lot of difference than how people receive you. And if you're right. coming across as really prudish and really restricted, then it may be that people don't cotton to you, don't warm to you, or to your message. And that can be a real problem.
Now, I think about this. There are typically callers into the Atheist Experience or other shows where it's like a Mormon describing, listen, I've fallen out of the faith, but I don't have an ability to, like, express that even to my own wife, because that would actually pull us away from the church, which is, like, a really big, powerful entity in our social circles.
Uh-huh.
Like, our kids would have to come out of schools. So I talked to them about that, my issue of faith, or with my, you know, minister there, my brother, my elders, and they told me basically to continue putting on a good face, because that will help to inspire other people who have the same doubts as he to continue this, like, this, the prevalence of, like, well, there's no problem here. So, like, the smiles that they put on, the congenial attitudes.
Nothing to see here. Keep moving.
Exactly. So, like, even within the same group, there's people who are like, I'm not following this, but I have to put on this effort to keep other people who feel the same way that I do with quiet. Like, it is an appearance that locks in a certain kind of mentality. And what's unfortunate is that it doesn't really give the opportunity to really discuss matters of faith in their church. If you have, for example, like, a real doubt, that could lead to a more beneficial idea of what the faith actually is. Like, maybe something that's even more true. Like, if you found a way to actually demonstrate that your faith was real, but people tell you don't look into it, just, you know, keep doing exactly what you're doing. Keep looking exactly how you're looking. Right. And by the way, keep your cufflinks like 1.8 inches away from your feet. That's just more distracting things you have to worry about rather than, is this belief that I have actually true or not?
Right.
And it's also like a recognition of the fact that, hey, you can't actually leave this community, so you might as well wear these, you know, prisoner outfit, corduroys, and a polo t-shirt. Deal with it.
Yeah, that's certainly a way to put it, a prisoner outfit.
I do feel that appearances can be used for good. Like, you definitely see how, remember, if you remember, like, previous presidential debates where there was, like, the battle of the pins. One president will wear, like, a American flag as a pin. The next one will wear one, like, three times the size. And, you know, voters look at that and are like, oh, this guy's way more patriotic.
Uh-huh.
But there's the aspect with regard to religion knows this. And that's why you have, like, the regalia. That's why you have priests with special hats. That's something I like to call is a special hat. Like, whenever you're part of, like, a religion that has, like, a very characteristic hat, that's what I know, like, it's completely crazy. It's gone off the deep end a little bit for me personally. But, like, the status of wearing something that other people can't wear or don't wear is a powerful thing. And I think it plays into the idea of appearance, but it also plays into the idea of tribes. Like, this is what my team wears, and no one else can wear this unless they believe what I believe.
Right.
And that's a powerful thing when you see other people or you're surrounded with a group of people who all look like you based on the things that you choose to present to yourself based on your appearance.
Yeah. Plus, it reinforces your own identity, your own self-identity to yourself. Did you ever read that old O. Henry story about clothes make the man?
Yes. Go ahead for our audience.
Yeah, well, there was three burglars, basically, and one of them was going to keep an eye out for the other two burglars, and to make it convincing to the people around, they dressed him as a policeman so that he could stand out on the street and keep an eye out. And then he started getting respect from the people around him, you know, and they would talk to him in a certain way, and he would have to respond in a certain way. And before you know it, he was actually believing that he was a policeman. He wasn't the sharpest of tools in the shed. But when it came time for the getaway, he tried to arrest the guys because he had identified with himself as being a policeman for so long. And it really wasn't that long, just an hour or so.
I think that's a powerful story, though, because it means, like, when you dress up as something, you become that something to an extent. Like, they tell you when you do job interviews, for example, one of the cool things you can do when you do an interview on the phone is to dress up as if you were there in person, because it puts you in the right kind of mentality.
Right.
As you're talking over the phone, that you are there to talk. Even if the other people can't see it, it's something that a lot of people would say translates. And, you know, there's something called like a stethoscope. It's this device that doctors wear to listen to people's heartbeats and breathing.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of people who carry this device around with them. We have the technology to deduce those kinds of diseases at a much higher level of accuracy, but it turns out that people just like seeing people in hospitals with stethoscopes. There's like a pleasing aspect to the whole, you know, tech routine.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like this kind of like a security theater. It's kind of like a pantomiming of, I know this is what you like to see. This makes me feel like more of a doctor. Let's just pretend and go through the ropes. But, I mean, it could be used for good and bad. Like you said, it's good to have cars that are distinguished so that you know they're police cars. It's good to have, like, signs that are like well established, that way you know when to stop, when to start.
Sure.
But people can utilize these things to borrow a sense of authority they haven't necessarily earned,
right,
or are validated in. And you'll see that more often than not in leadership and church organizations. And that's why it's something to be properly mindful of. And if they're using that power for their own benefits, we shouldn't put ourselves in a position where, one, we fall privy to that, or we start to detriment our own standpoints by knocking down our appearances as well. Case in point, I saw a great debate between an atheist and a presuppositionalist. We talked about that a while back ago.
Yeah. What is all the roaring behind you? There's a lot of noise behind you.
I'm still on the street.
Yeah,
I'm almost home though.
Okay.
But there's a precept, and he's in a tie. He's dressed up well. You know, he may not have the best logical argument, but he looks good. The atheist that showed up to talk to him, you know, he was casual, but he showed up in like a polo shirt pants. And I'm just saying, like, it seemed like one guy seems more of like a professional than the other. One guy seems more like an authority than the other.
Right.
Even though I understood the arguments, the layman who's in the audience, that's a barrier for them. And I know that it doesn't matter what you look like to affect your opinion, but it does go a long way when you at least try to, I guess, present yourself well along with the arguments that you have.
Yeah, and it's not even that you're dressing up for your opponent. You're dressing up for the audience to show respect for your audience and the topics that you're going to be discussing.
Right. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people don't take that for granted. They feel like, oh, I know what's right, and people will just believe me because of how I look.
Right.
No, our brains are not as sophisticated to not be
easily
biased by appearances. Has there ever been a time where you've noted that a person might be underdressed for the occasion?
Nothing comes to mind, but yes, I'm sure that could happen.
Okay.
Do you have one? An example?
Yeah, I got a couple.
Okay.
I got a couple. So if you ever look online, if you see, there's pictures of like North Korean generals of war.
Yeah.
They have a variety of military outfits that predominantly have a series of medals on them.
Mm-hmm.
The medals are as big as the palm of your hand.
And so these generals can only hold like maybe so many in a row on their chest.
Yeah.
Yet they are so, you know, godly decorated that these gold ribbons like literally take up the entire panel of their front shirt.
Right.
And they have like very, very, very wide hats and wide brimmed hats.
Yeah.
The overall look is like, I wonder if this guy can even sit down.
Right.
He's worried he's going to flip over with all the stuff he has around him. The reason why they do that, of course, is to demonstrate how much status they have over everybody else, particularly in the military, which is like one of the major careers that you can have in North Korea. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like one of those things where it's like, I am dressing in this way to gain respect from you, even though I may not necessarily have earned it in a respectful way,
right,
or in a way where I'm willing to return it in a back and forth manner. I'm doing this to show that I'm above you.
Yeah, and in a way, it's a demand respect rather than earn respect.
Right. It's also the sort of thing where they look so high that people who are below them are like, well, I want some medals too. And maybe the people who are way up there are like terrified for their lives. They're like, man, I hope I don't sneeze when the leader, great leader, comes, you know, in front of us, because then I'd probably get my family killed.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to stay here. But I can't show any kind of fear. I'm locked into the system. I have to look the part.
Right.
And at that point, most people are just playing the part.
Right.
So
what we're talking about is when we get into confrontation, not necessarily confrontations, debates and discussions, in a formal venue or discussion, then we need to at least dress the part of someone who may have the respect of those of his peers, and not dress down or you know, throw off the appearance simply because
right.
you don't feel like you need to dress up for it, because the ideas will speak for themselves. The presentation is a lot of it.
I agree. I think, like, if you ever go to, if you are, for example, a rationalist or an atheist, and you have the opportunity to speak for people, or if you have the opportunity to present yourself on, like, a video podcast,
uh-huh.
or, you know, visit someplace, give, like, a seminar, or, like, just even, like, go to someone's house who wants to have, like, a legitimate conversation with you about, like, maybe some issues with faith that they want to have. Take the effort and present yourself well.
Right.
Because now you are presenting yourself as a package.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's definitely context where, you know, your casual dress and the way you always look is always fair. But when you are trying to, not necessarily convince people, but put on the best
case
for why you think, why you are convinced for what you believe to be true. Take a book from the Christians. Take a book from, you know, the Sikhs. Take a book from Muslims. They dress well. They coordinate how they look mm-hmm. with what their message is.
Yeah.
If they say that they are authoritative, they dress in an authoritative way. If they try to show that, you know, they're humble and ready to reach out to people, they'll do it the same way. And I think it's important that we do it. I think the only people who don't do this, I think the people might be taking a little bit more further away.
Yeah.
The previous Pope, do you remember him?
Uh-huh.
He would have, like, gold-plated Nikes and white posh robes and stuff like that, better dressed than Rick James.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah,
now,
the thing about it is, if you dress down, your opposition can use that against you. They can point it out, even though it has absolutely nothing to do with your arguments or your logic or reason that you present in the arguments. They can use that hominem's attack and say, look at him. He doesn't have any respect for even himself. You know, look the way he dresses. He obviously doesn't think much of himself. You know, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the logic or the argument or the results that he can present or the evidence, but it's still a target. And, you know, why offer that kind of target?
Also, like, for example, there's some really famous, you know, atheists that are out there. I can think of some that dress up in a very intimidating way when they go to present themselves, even though they're very soft-spoken and are very intellectual with their words. They might have, like, one of those V for Vendetta mustaches that curl at the end, and, like, a tiny V goatee, and they wear dark sunglasses and Affliction t-shirts and, like, big brimmed hats. And, like, if they have, like, a disheveled appearance,
uh-huh.
even if they have a very rational argument, there's points that are taken away.
Right.
Not from the people who probably already agree with them, but from the people that they're trying to reach out to in the first place.
Right.
While I'm saying
no second chance at a first impression.
Oh, that's perfect. I love that.
Yeah.
I just say, like, again, even though what they're saying isn't really, like, the validity of their argument isn't affected, the texture that comes in can really affect it as well. There was, like, for example, I wonder if there could be an experiment where you get, like, a package where everything's, like, exactly what you want on the inside, but the cardboard box is, like, dirty on the outside, or maybe, like, has, like, loose tape or is wet. It will deplete your review or your appreciation of whatever's inside the box
right. If
the box itself isn't, like, well-maintained. Uh-huh. And you got to think of your appearance as like a box.
Yeah.
You're selling yourself. It's marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And religious people know marketing, and that's why I think it's important for atheists to get more on the ball with how they present themselves in public, particularly if they're doing so on a professional scale, on a professional level. They should try to make the effort to at least clean up a little bit and continue doing what makes them comfortable, but at least do so in a good appearance, because I believe appearance does matter.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you 100%. We're getting down to the bottom of the hour. Anything you want to say before we go to break?
Yeah, we're going to flip it around on the second half. I can't wait.
Really? What are we going to say? What are we going to talk about? What do you got to
say? We're going to talk about how appearance doesn't matter.
And present
some pretty good evidences as well why it shouldn't matter at all. People who break the trend, and maybe the best ways to break the trend.
Okay. Sounds good. And since we're going to go to break, and this is an atheist show, I'm going to play a song by Aretha Franklin called It Ain't Necessarily So, in honor of the lady. So here we go.
To read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. Now little David was small, but oh my. Yes, David was small, but oh my. He fought big Goliath, who lay down and died. Yes, David was small. But oh my. You ever heard about Jonah? He lived in a well. You ever heard about Jonah? He lived in a well. And he made his home in that big ship after one. Yes, Jonah, he lived in a well. Whenever it's possible, but with a little grain of salt. Methuselah lived 900 years. But tell me, who calls that living when no gal is given to no man? Well, it's 900 years. That's why I say that it ain't necessarily, it ain't, no, necessarily, it ain't necessarily so, ain't necessarily so, ain't necessarily so.
Ain't necessarily so. You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LP, right, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. So if you're not listening on that date, then it's probably a podcast or a rebroadcast. So don't try to call in then, but you can call in now. The number is 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937 to get in on the conversation for Atheist Talk Radio. So, Wombat, are you back with us?
Today we're going to be talking about appearances. Appearances matter, or do they? And right now we're in the or do they section of the show. And what we talked about in the first half is, I think there's definitely some context, or situational context, social context, where, you know, if you're presenting yourself to public, it's absolutely imperative that you do so in a way that's congenial to the message that you're trying to get across. Because that's what the religious people are doing. That's their strategy. And if you don't follow that, you're losing in a simple battle of marketing. Right. If you go into a debate in casual clothes and khakis, maybe even shorts, dare I say Crocs, you're gonna make a really bad first impression. Yeah. And you might convince the people who already believe what you think to be true, but you're not going to debate your shows to try to convince the people who already agree with you. You're trying to reach out to people.
Right.
And because of that, you need to put your best foot forward.
Yep.
Take a lesson from the guys, you know,
who, life, even when you're not on stage, when you're not in a discussion, you know, put your best foot forward. You represent atheism. Make a good life and live a good life and be a good representation of freedom.
Right. It doesn't mean necessarily have to live a lie. It just means that in certain contexts,
you have to dress up every day.
right.
No,
it's just that you're willing to make the effort to show, hey, I really respect the venue that I'm at.
Yeah.
I really respect your time. Thank you guys for coming to listen to me.
Right.
Here I am dressed up a little bit, and I appreciate it.
It's
and I'm
funny
comfortable.
That you use the phrase living a lie, because that's what a lot of atheists are doing when they don't come out of the office, I mean out of the closet, and they live a lie. They live as a Christian or as a Muslim, you know, they, even though they don't believe. So when they tell you they're an atheist, they are telling you what they truly believe and how they truly feel. Don't disparage them for being that. They're giving you the truth. You should recognize that and appreciate that.
Right. I also think that probably one of the biggest take-home messages is you're letting – and I mean this in a cautious way, of course, but like letting people know that you're an atheist is one of the best advertisements for atheism.
Yes.
Because atheism then goes from, oh, these terrible people who just are so silly that they can't believe in a God that's so obvious, to, oh, my friend Steve's one.
Right.
Exactly. Like, my friend Steve's one, and he's an awesome guy. He seems happy. He has kids. Well, my coworker Pam, she always helps me out. She's really, really smart, and she doesn't believe in that. Oh, that's kind of weird. I hear what you're saying about atheists, but like I know like several of them, and they aren't that terrible. Wait, these people are going to hell? What's going on here? Wait, maybe I could maybe I should reconsider this, because these guys are nicer than the people I sit in the pews with. I'd rather hang out with them.
And one of the points I like to make is if you're an atheist and living in the closet, then you're letting people around you, even if you don't say that you're a Christian or don't say that you're a believer, if you're living in that type of day-to-day life, you're the atheists and the free thinkers around you, you're letting them assume that you are a believer. And they would not approach you the same way that they would if they knew that you didn't believe either. You know, there are a lot of friends out there that I have made since coming out of the atheist closet that have always assumed that I was a Christian until then.
Same here.
Yeah.
I agree.
So,
and you can't let the people who dress up and appear authoritative dictate what your position is,
right,
or what kind of person, a character you have,
exactly,
if you're an atheist.
Uh-huh.
I think it's important that you, as I said, appearances matter. You present yourself as an atheist and let people know. It doesn't have to be an offensive, hey, by the way, this is where I'm at. It can be so easy. It's like, oh,
right.
Tell me you believe the Bible. Let me know that, because I don't really pay attention to all that. Or I'm not really religious. Let me know about this holiday. Or, hey, I celebrated this cool holiday with my friend, and it wasn't a big deal, because I'm not really religious. It's not a big deal.
Well, wait a minute.
I tell people.
Wait a minute, Wombat. You were saying that appearances don't matter in this section of the show.
I said that. I was going to get to it, but you kind of like you got us to like this really, really good point that I probably should end the first half of the show.
Okay.
But I'm saying like your appearance, presenting yourself does. But again, even if you don't want to take it that far, there's a lot of different avenues that you could take. I know some this might sound a little tricky, but there are some people who, for example, don't like the big A word and try to go for the little A word, agnostic, right?
Right.
For them, it's a in-between, and they use it that way. But it really just means that you don't know that a God exists. And I think it's totally fine to say, oh, I don't really know if that's real or not. So, like, I'm open to it, but I don't know for sure. I think that's totally a fair thing.
They're not talking about beliefs; they're talking about knowledge. And I'll make that point.
There definitely are.
Every time I hear that.
But agnostics tend to be good friends to rational thinking.
Yeah.
For the most part, definitely atheists, but definitely rational thinking.
Sometimes they're the same person, like me. I'm an agnostic atheist.
Absolutely. Yeah. And rarely, sometimes you meet like the really cool agnostic theists who are joys to talk to. They are absolutely wonderful people. It's only when you talk to the Gnostic theists that it's like really hard, or even worse, the Gnostic atheists. So like, trust me, this, we have like weird, my cat got caught in a plastic bag.
Oh no.
Poor baby. There you go. But yeah, for the most part, I think the biggest thing that we should be open to is advertising ourselves properly, because our appearances do matter. Now let's get back to our appearances don't matter. There's a guy named Anthony Magnabosco. He does this practice called street epistemology. Cool dude. When he goes out, he talks to people about what they believe and why they believe it. And he's pretty upfront about it. He will say like, hey, I'd like to talk about your God belief. It takes about 5 minutes. Typically when I have these conversations, people's belief in their God drops. And would you want to participate in something like that? It's actually really fun. And people are like really off put by like how candid he is about it.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and he also, he has like a GoPro camera strapped to his chest, and there's like another one of the, like a rafter just above him. So like he's recording you, and it's just really bizarre. And a lot of people might be taken off guard by that, but I feel like he compensates for that by just dressing up as he normally does in like flip flops.
Well, he's having an informal conversation with people he meets on the street, neither one of which are preparing for any kind of formal discussion.
Exactly. But there's some really clever touches to how he dresses, because he's riding that line. He doesn't want to seem so authoritative that he's like putting people off balance or giving guarded answers.
Like
he
a wants preacher to seem like on the street.
He doesn't want to seem like that.
Yeah.
He wants to be like in a friendly demeanor, so he says like, you know, I just try to dress as comfortably as I can because I'm out there standing up trying to talk to people for a long period of time. Yeah. So he's got his sandals on, he's got his short pants, and he's got like a bright t-shirt on just to reflect most of the rays. There was a time where he had eye surgery, so he had an eye patch too. He would ask people to have their goggles. But he would compensate how informal he was dressed to help the casual conversation. And he also had like a clipboard. He came up with the idea of going out with a clipboard. The idea with the clipboard is, you look as if you have some sort of authority when you're talking about, anything with people, if you have a clipboard in your hand.
Yeah.
So like when you say, hey, can you have like a 5 minute conversation? If you're holding a clipboard, it seems like, oh, this is like a guy who works here. Oh, this is the guy
who's going to mark down my answers. My answers are important.
Yeah. He's listening to me, and this is going to mean something. This is a chance to be somebody today. So I'm going to listen to this guy. And the camera thing, like, you know, a lot of people don't like being recorded, but he will ask ahead of time if you want to be recorded. Like, he's mindful of the things that people pay attention to when they are needing to present, like, I guess their A game. Like, I want to talk about your God beliefs. Would you mind if I record it? Also, I have a clipboard. And just to balance all that pressure, I'm just casually dressed. I'm in sandals. I'm just a regular guy, and I'm just going to ask questions.
Right.
It's a really, really good balance between the two.
I think the message here is to dress appropriately, whether it's
formal
or informally or whatever. Dress for the occasion. Dress appropriately.
Yeah. Be mindful of how you're presenting yourself. Yeah. But it doesn't. Saying appearances matter doesn't mean put on a suit and tie at every occasion.
Right.
Sometimes it's good to like dress down. And you can just be comfortable. I know when I go out and I do my talks, I don't
I've gone out with a black t-shirt once, and I got no one to sit with me. And I was like, what in the world is going on? And then I go out like the next day with a bright blue t-shirt, and I could not stop the number of people sitting at my table. Yeah, so I think really what it is yeah, it's good to, for my locale, I have people that like, I'm on a walk trail or a running trail, and so people will need to see me ahead of time before they become more curious and maybe slow down and are willing to talk to me. But if I wear black or dark colors, especially if I wear like a dark green, I just fade in right into the background. Even with the table there, I just sort of like fade into the background. So it's good to like pop a little bit. And that way people see what I'm doing and they're like, what the hell is this guy doing? And then when we have like that moment of eye contact, I'm like, hey, please stop to me. And then they're like, okay, fine, sure. I don't know what this is all about. And then we have like a great conversation for like the next 40 minutes. And they're like, oh, thank you. This is so cool. Can I have your card? So yeah, it's great. Yeah. I'm really, really, I think the way that you present yourself is important, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to dress up in a suit and tie.
Right.
Do it that's appropriate for the conversation you have, but don't take it too far to where you're the Pope. Don't take it too far to where you're dressed up as a clown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to, what you say doesn't change based on how you look, but the way how people receive what you're trying to give them is. And that's why I think it's important for you
now,
to
we have people in the audience who don't listen all the time, I'm sure. But so can you tell us what you're doing out there with the table and talking to people? Can you go into that just a little bit?
Sure. So I have a hobby where I talk to people about whatever they want to talk about. And what we try to do together is come to a conclusion of how they came to that conclusion that they had. What methods that they used. Really, if I can ask a really good question that sticks with them after the end of the conversation, I'm really happy with that. And the idea of it is to put a pebble in someone's shoe.
Yeah.
So like the idea of asking questions that stick with people, I'm calling that pebbling. There's a guy who came up with that. His name's Chris. Shout outs to him. But it falls into a larger umbrella of conversational techniques called street epistemology, which is just the idea of you're on the street or you're in an informal location and you're trying to get down to the reason how someone learned about something, which is what epistemology is.
You have a channel for that too on YouTube, don't you?
I sure do. It's called Let's Chat. And I think if you check out Let's Chat, it's now popular enough that when you search for Let's Chat, it's one of the first things that pop up.
It's got like a logo that looks like a conversational balloon or something.
Yeah, definitely. It's a green background, purple logo. But it's a really, really fun channel where you can just listen to people talk about whatever they believe. Most of the times it's about a religious belief. And what you normally see in these kinds of talks on YouTube that aren't like street epistemology or pebbling talks is like arguments or, you know, condemnations or judgments or people who are really uncomfortable, maybe people who are really defensive, debates, you know, shout matches, all sorts of like really unproductive kind of conversations. The goal of street epistemology isn't really to target the person that has the belief or even the belief itself. It's just to talk about the methodology that connects the two. And turns out that when you talk about the method, the thing that connects the person with the belief, there's so little ego there that people are willing to talk about that candidly without putting their defensive, you know, information or their energy into it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they're willing to have a really engaging conversation about how they came to the conclusion. And if it turns out they don't have a very good reason for how to get there, they're willing to admit that they don't know. And that's a really good place to be because that's the best place to start learning
and
about.
It's an honest place to be, too, if you don't know the answer. You don't want to put forward something that you claim is the answer if you don't really know, or parrot somebody else's answer if it's not your answer.
Mm. Right. And I think if I were to go back to appearances, one of the cool things about SE is that the conversations don't look like arguments. They don't look like debates. They look like really casual conversations that honestly you can really have anywhere. You could, I found like SE has been, like street epistemology is when I say SE, has been a really good format for me to have these kinds of conversations at work or with family members or with friends where I can just have a really fun casual conversation. And then slip into more of like an SE mode where I'm still very casual, still happy, still, you know, congenial, but I'm talking about more heavier subjects in a really genuinely interested way. And because I'm talking about the method that the person uses to get to their conclusion and not trying to diminish their conclusions to the person themselves,
right.
we have like a really good back and forth. Mm-hmm. And the appearance of that, not just between me and the person I'm talking to, but for other people who are listening to me have that conversation, knowing that my side isn't the side of I believe in a God, but hey, I'm an atheist and I'm wanting to understand where you're coming from. And I'm asking good questions, maybe questions that the audience can't answer themselves, but are realizing that maybe they don't really have a good answer to that either.
Yeah.
These are kinds of like good advertisements of just like, okay, I know an atheist. Okay, he's asking good questions. Maybe he has a point. Maybe that's an interesting perspective. I just had that conversation today with a guy who believes in a God, was trying to say basically like, hey, you know, you believe in Columbus, but you don't believe in the Bible. And I was trying to explain to him the difference between the amount of evidence that you would need for like a really, really incredible claim and the evidence that you need for a really, really mundane claim and how that standard would need to be different. And as the more extraordinary claim becomes more extraordinary, I would need more extraordinary evidence to meet for that. And I can't necessarily believe something that like, you know, an incredible, there's not like, ask him, is there anything more extraordinary than God? It's like, no, well, I'm going to need a really extraordinary amount of evidence, and that one book isn't really enough, well, don't you think?
Yeah. And he's like, it's not even just the claim. I mean, if you buy into the claim, if you come up and say, yeah, okay, I believe in your God, and I believe that Jesus is the Savior that we all need, then you've got to start going to church. You've got to start tithing. You've got to meet meetings. You've got to prayer groups.
You got to buy the Bible.
You got to
get the shirt.
You have to commit to financial and temporal sacrifices to be able to undertake this belief system. And that, on top of the claim of this extraordinary being, it requires a whole lot more evidence for me to say, yeah, okay, I'm on board. Because that's a huge commitment, and it's also a huge claim that not only do I have a soul, but it lives forever. And it can go to a bad place or a good place after I die. You know, there's no evidence for any of this stuff in the world as we see the world around us. There's been no evidence for it for the last 2,000 years. But I'm supposed to take your claim that I have a soul, that it lives forever, it keeps all of my memories and intact and lives after my body goes away, and there is an all-judgmental God that's going to decide whether or not it goes to one place or another. These are a lot of claims. People just take them on face value because they've been raised with those claims. But if you stop and look at those claims for just a minute, you'll realize how outlandish they are and how much evidence you're going to have for me to believe in, to buy into all those claims.
Right. Though, I would say if you said all of that to the guy, it would have started another argument.
He'd probably get up and walk away. Yeah, I'm not really good for street epistemology. I would probably start a different part of a discussion.
I would say that you started a social media group with the Facebook Ask Atheist Society in Knoxville.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you have lots of pictures up there. You have like really good congenial conversations that are going on all the time. Yeah. When people look up for atheists in Knoxville of all places, they see pictures of people who are smiling, happy. Yeah. When I saw your picture on the meetup group, it was just a big collection of diverse group of people all sitting around a table having a really good conversation. When you go there in person, it's even bigger. Mm-hmm. There's even more massive groups of people. And you're like, all of you guys are atheists. This is insane. Where have you guys all been? This is amazing. And it's just like visiting family and friends and eating with
them.
They get
to be family.
Great.
They really do.
Yeah. They really do. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like that all falls into the presentation of atheists in public, showing a good face, whether it's at work or at school, and making us be harder to marginalize as these evil people deserving to be going to hell.
Harder to build a straw man against us when people know us and know how we are, that we're good people.
Right.
We live next door. We work with them. We're just normal humans, just like everybody else. We have our foibles and our things that we shine at. But we don't eat babies.
Like right now at work.
We don't go around robbing old ladies, you know, that type of thing.
It's like right now at work, I have two good friends. They're both religious. They both go to the same Church of Latter-day Saints church that's inside the city that I'm in. And we've had multiple talks about religion. And I make no bones about where I'm from. Yeah. But I'd never make it a judgment on them. I'm just saying, hey, I just need a really good reason to believe that. Do you have one? And they give me some. We break those down, and then they realize, okay, maybe that's not the best reason, but I still believe it. I'm like, right. Okay, cool. When you have a good one, I'm open to listening to it. Right. But until then, here's my position, and it's the same one I've had at the beginning. I don't know it, and right. because I don't know it, I don't believe it. Right. And they said, like, that's an interesting point of view. They don't say I'm wrong. They don't argue with it. They're just like, well, that's an interesting point. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they've come to terms with where I'm at, but we can still go out. We're still yeah. going out. We're going out on Thursday to eat food. Mm-hmm. When they go to church and they say, all of us are going to heaven. This is going to be great. It's going to be great. Tyrone's not going to be there, huh? Well, I don't know. Maybe that's kind of weird. Like, it could just be one of those things that they think about.
Right.
If anything, it'll pull them away. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
If anything, it pulls them slightly away from falling wholesale into the dogma that they believe in. Because
yeah.
if the dogma tells them that only they are the chosen people and no one else is deserving to go to heaven, yeah. but they have friends that don't think the same way they do, that could be really, really big for them. And that could be the start of something interesting. And say their kids decide, hey, I'm don't necessarily believe in God. At least they won't react as if that's completely unheard of to them. At least they'll have friends that they can reference that off. It's like, well, you can still be a good person. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. Maybe we can work on this. Maybe right. I can try to see it later on. But, yeah, I can understand where you – I understand the point.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that gets me about believers when they get to know you, they immediately think – well, they need to be brought to Christ. They need to be brought into the religion. They don't realize we've already been there. I mean, I was raised religious. You were raised religious. Most atheists out there, not all. Some of them were born into a secular family who didn't push religion down their throat. But you and I were raised religious, and we learned the
Absolutely.
Arguments that answer their apologetics, and we saw through it and came through it. But now whenever somebody who's a believer hears, you know, I'm an atheist, you know, they immediately think, well, my job as a Christian is to bring this non-believer into the fold. And he starts, you know, they immediately start selling you their religion. Or and if you don't buy it right away, they start, you know, they switch over to the other side instead of the carrot they hit you with the stick of hell. But, you know, the thing that they need to keep in mind is that we've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and we're not a good audience
right.
for proselytizing to. You know,
it's interesting that you said that.
Go ahead.
There's a book called A Manual for Creating Atheists.
Uh-huh.
It's a book by Peter Boghossian. It's the book that kind of, like, coined the term street epistemology and, like, described, like, some of the
Stephen Boghossian book?
The practice. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A Manual for Creating Atheists.
Uh-huh.
The method for street epistemology has advanced dramatically so, and he might need to rewrite that book. He's probably going to write another version of the book later on. Hopefully it doesn't have as controversial as a title, because it kind of hurts when people look up street epistemology and they see A Manual for Creating Atheists, because really anyone, regardless of their religious association or affiliation, can benefit from SE. But I think the real manual for creating atheists, going back to the point that you made, is the Bible.
Right.
Is the holy book that uh-huh. the people follow. Because once you read that book with a critical eye, once you read that book with the idea of, maybe this isn't right. Maybe I need to, like,
maybe this was written by preachers 2,000 years ago. And ask yourself, would you read a book written by a preacher today and believe it as the word of God?
Right.
You know, why would you believe a 2,000-year-old book written by preachers for the same extent?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point. And you read it and you start going through, like, chapters like Exodus, where you can, like, own slaves and there's no problem with it. And then Jesus says, hey, I'm not here to change the laws. I'm just here to tell you to love me because I'm God. And people are like, yeah, this is the best book ever. I'm like, wait a second. And then there's, like, chapters where it's like, God's good, God's wonderful. And then he drowns, like, literally every baby on the planet.
Yeah.
And then he goes back to being like, I made a promise for you. Here's a rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you see how often I am? I'm like,
right.
this is, like, a terrible character. Like,
yeah.
you read through the whole machinations of setting up the trap that is
yeah.
the Garden of Evil. Like, that is a trap doomed for failure to leave fruit that is inevitable for people in reach of people who have no concept of good or bad
right.
until after they eat the fruit.
Yeah.
And you knew it ahead of time. And even puts talking animals in there to be like, hey, you should eat that fruit.
Yeah.
Like, that is the biggest trap door and
right.
the most obvious point. Yeah, he blames
so
people
so
for falling into it. I'm like,
yeah.
hmm.
And, well,
it's
I like
very
to tell
day.
People, you know, the first thing out of their mouth generally is, you believe in love, don't you? Well, God is love. And I said, well, have you
yeah.
read the Bible? Have you noticed how he treats people in the Bible? I mean, the most
right.
way that he interacts with people in the Bible is to kill them or to give them plagues,
well, yeah.
which kill them. And then even Jesus, in the later Testament, says, "I did not come to bring peace on earth. I came to bring a sword and divide families against each other." They don't read that from their. I mean, they don't hear that from their preacher on Sunday. But it's in there. It's in the Bible, and you know, even human sacrifice is in the Bible. And I'm not talking about Jesus.
If you go back to appearances, they are victims to how their Bible is being presented to them.
Right.
By their pastor, because the pastors never go to those verses. They always go to the soft ones that bring more revenue into the church, and they probably have a little
talent. Feel good verses,
exactly, like the ones that they just repeat over and over again. People are like, "Oh man, this book's so great. I don't even need to read it. I got this Bible study that goes over these particular chapters. I got my pastor that tells me these chapters. As long as I have a copy, I'm golden. Don't think about it." But if they start when they start to read the book, as what I was saying, like, you know, the Manual for Creating Atheists. You will read that book and you'll start to be like, "Huh, I can't believe that was in there. Huh, I can't believe this is in there. Wait, what is this book? Where did it come from? Does anyone know who wrote this? Well, no one knows who wrote this? What's going on?
There's another one out there I'd like to recommend, and it sounds funny, but it tells you an awful lot about atheism. It's Atheism for Dummies. And I'm not kidding. The book is out there. We've had the author here in Knoxville at an RET event, and he gave a talk. So Atheism for Dummies, check it out if you get a chance. By the way, if you've been hearing a lot of apologetics and you don't know the answers, the Christian apologetics, you don't know the answers to them, don't know what to say when you hear them, you can go to my website. I've got like, I don't know, 70 articles on my website. It's digital.
Highly recommended.
Digitalfreethought.com. Click on the blog button to go over to the blog part. Not only that, but I have like 60 or 70 atheist songs that I feature on the show or on that site, and also this podcast, this radio show, I archive them and put them on that site as well. So go to digitalfreethought.com and click on the blog button for more information. Get to the top of the hour. Got about a minute. What do you got to say?
Okay.
Say bye.
So like I said, we were talking about appearances. Uh-huh. Appearances doesn't just mean dressing up in a tie and a suit and a cummerbund. It means dressing appropriately for the occasion. And if you could dress in a way that shows respect to your audience, it shows that you're thankful to be there. That's important. But if you can also dress in a way that like keeps everyone relaxed, if you're trying to keep people relaxed, or keep people engaged in the conversation, if you want to keep them engaged in the conversation, there's ways to do that too. Just be mindful of that and dress appropriately, because your appearances do matter to a limit, and at least wear matching clothes if you can. It's good.
That's right. And if you can, come out of the atheist closet. The atheists around you don't know you're an atheist till you do. You can make
friends.
So this is Doubter Five and Wombat. Don't worry about hell, because everybody's going to somebody else's hell, and no exceptions. Cool. Say bye, Wombat.
Bye, Wombat.
Bye, y'all. We'll see you next week. Bye.